Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairman Burns. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor Acero, and Chairman Giampietro. And thank you, my fellow Democrats. I'm up here in upstate New York. It's wonderful to be with you. And may I just take a moment to pay my thanks to the co-chairmen that have made this wonderful gathering possible tonight, to Dr. Arthur Kaplan, to William Ribiot, to Fred Moylan, to Benny Niles, to Vince Esposito, and to all of those that have come in from Schuyler and Little Falls, from New Hartford and Rome and Utica and Herkimer and Whitestown. Oh, it's wonderful. Wonderful to see you tonight. And didn't you like those screaming eagles that we put on out here? Ladies and gentlemen, I want to especially thank our young people that are here, the New Hartford High School band that's with us here tonight. I want to thank also the Whitesboro High School band that met us at the airport. And I surely do want to thank all of the entertainment. We've had Webb Tilton, we've had Tommy James and the Shondells, Tommy. And by the way, I want you to know the Shondells were with us in West Virginia, and if there are any Republicans left there, they were the ones that were hiding out during the day that we were in West Virginia. They really bowled them over. And I want to thank those magnificent Yankees. And I surely want to thank Shelley Winters for her presence here tonight. And the West Canada Valley, too. I want to thank them. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you why you ought to elect the ticket of Humphrey and Muskie. I want you to meet my secret weapon, Mrs. Humphrey. Muriel, please stand up. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I'm very proud of my lady. I'll tell you something, she'll make you a fine first lady if you give us the chance. And Mr. Waskowitz, I bet you like the name of Edmund Muskie, too.
I do.
And to all my Polish brethren, na zdrowie. Let me ask you something. Let me ask you, just put it like John Burns put it to you. You want that ticket of Wallace and General LeMay?
No!
Can you imagine Nixon and Agnew? Think of what a great time and a great country we can have with the Democratic ticket of Humphrey and Muskie. You're Democrats tonight, there's no doubt about that. You know, I'm reminded, my friends, I'm reminded of what Will Rogers once said about the Democratic Party when I see how we've performed, the fun that we've had. Somebody asked Mr. Rogers once, what was his partisan politics? He said, I do not belong to any organized political party. I'm a Democrat. Now, we may not be as well organized as the Nixon machine, but I guarantee you we have more fun and we know what's going on. But when I looked out here tonight and saw all these balloons, I asked the mayor, I said, has Mr. Nixon been here? And he said, no. But you know, I thought he'd been here because it looked like he might have left some of those balloons that he takes with him on all of his trips. But I want to say to you that those balloons are flying higher than any Republican balloon will ever get. I can tell they're Democratic balloons. That's, look at that. That's right, let them go. That's the way we're going, right up, 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 up to the White House. Ladies and gentlemen, I have to make an announcement here tonight. May I just have your attention? Something has happened that you ought to know about. The Republicans have descended upon this community. For a while, I thought they were maybe bringing Mr. Nixon here to debate with me. And then I saw their airplane at the airport. And on it, it said GOP Truth Squad. I knew Nixon wasn't aboard that. But I'll tell you what I think I should tell you why they're here. They want to get a little truth. They want to hear a little truth. And we're going to tell them a little truth tonight. The other day when we were in Tennessee, I believe it was at Knoxville, Tennessee, I noticed that the Republican Truth Squad airplane was at the airport. They were getting ready to take off at the same time that we were. And then I noticed that they didn't get off the ground, which is not unusual for a Republican. But I also noticed that the word came that they'd had a mechanical failure. And since then, I've been checking to see what happened. And here is the long last we have to report. Every time that the pilot pushed the detect button, the button that would tell whether or not you were detecting a lie, every time they'd push the detect button on their lie detector, what do you think came up? It says Nixon's the one. So they've had to repair the job. Now tonight, you've given me a great opportunity. There are thousands of people outside of this hall, just as there are thousands within this hall. This is a great privilege for a man in public life to have the opportunity of talking, and hopefully talking sense to you about this country, about the issues in this campaign. I've traveled this America now from one end to the other, from Florida to the state of Washington, from New York and to California. And let me tell you, it's nice to be in the best Democratic city in upstate New York. And that's where I am tonight. And I've been doing some talking, and I've been doing some listening. I think that I have a pretty good idea now what our people are thinking. And our people are concerned, and they rightly should be. Our people are concerned about our country and the direction it may take. And they know that the choice that they make in November will be one of the most important decisions of their political lives. And I believe, my fellow Americans, that our people are asking these questions of themselves. And tonight, I ask you to ponder with me these questions. Which candidate and which party can you trust? And which candidate and which party can bring us peace? And which candidate and which party can hold this country together? And I think the American people, and I believe the American people are yet to make up their minds. They are pondering these serious questions, as they well should. And tonight, with all of the joy that we have, and with all of the exuberance and all of the enthusiasm that is here, I ask you to take a few minutes with me to think about these questions. First of all, let's look at the way this campaign is being conducted. The third party candidate has made a deliberate premeditated appeal to hate, to fear, to anger, to frustration. In other words, to that which is worst in America. And my friends, I ask this question: is that any way for anyone to seek the highest office and the gift of the American people? Is that any way to run for president? I think the answer is no. And now that candidate has added to his ticket a man of distinguished military background, but a man with no political experience. He has added a bombing general who thinks that the nuclear bomb is, as he put it, just another weapon. When a man can say that it makes no difference whether you die from a rusty knife or from a nuclear weapon, he fails to understand what goes on in this last third of the 20th century. And is not the man to have in the second spot on any ticket a heartbeat away from the presidency. Yes, brute force at home and catastrophic force abroad represents no policy worthy of this country. America must stand for something more than repression and power. Now, my Republican opponent is a little more subtle. In fact, he's a little more tricky. In the South, he talks one way. In the North, he talks another. In the North, he stood silent during the ugly campaign against a distinguished Associate Justice of the Supreme Court, whom the President had nominated as the Chief Justice. But in the South, he slyly joined in on that campaign to scuttle that nomination. The first time in the history of this country that a President's nomination for a Supreme Court Justice, the Chief Justice, has ever been demeaned by the threat of filibuster, an undemocratic practice. And Mr. Nixon played it both ways. He said Mr. Fortas was a distinguished jurist, but he refused to speak up for him and to call off his allies in the United States Senate. And today the United States has seen the spectacle of the courts of this land being made a political football, a dangerous thing, my friends, in these times of difficulty. Mr. Nixon says that he's for the treaty to stop the spread of nuclear weapons, a treaty that's in our interest, a treaty that's in our security interest. He says he's for it. But that treaty today lies in the Senate of the United States without action. Why? Because Mr. Nixon and his allies in the United States Senate, his Republican allies, refused to ratify it. Mr. Nixon is like the man who says he can teach geography either way. He can teach it that the world is round, or he can teach it that the world is flat. But that's no way, my friends, to qualify for being President of the United States. But while the Republican candidate has been ducking and evading and has been silent on many of the issues, his campaign managers have been busy. They've been busy mailing secret messages to the airlines, to special interests, such as the stock market traders on Wall Street, assuring them that the Nixon Republican administration will look after their interests. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm here tonight to assure you that if I'm your president, I'm going to look after your interests, the people's interests. Yes, I know, I read, I hear that Mr. Nixon is cool and confident. I know that I hear that he has spent much of his time down at Miami Beach as a vacationer. But let me say, my dear friends, the White House is no place for a vacationer. The White House is a place for a worker and for a leader. You know, Mr. Nixon's enjoying his presidency. He's convinced by that what he reads and what he hears that he is the president. And so he has taken the American people for granted. Well, I think I can remind New Yorkers of a situation 20 years ago. Exactly 20 years ago this October, another Republican candidate took the American people for granted. He too thought he'd been elected. He too read the public opinion polls and said he was in. He too was looking with fond eyes upon the White House. And today that Republican candidate is known as the former governor of New York, Mr. Dewey, and not the former president, Mr. Dewey. Now, my friends, I want to be fair, and I want to live in the American tradition, and I want Mr. Nixon to know that I intend to do for him what Mr. Truman did for Mr. Dewey, retire him to private life. Now, you can't trust a candidate. You can't trust a candidate like George Wallace, who only appeals to the people's fears. And you cannot trust a candidate like Richard Nixon, who refuses to speak out on the vital issues, and who says one thing to one group, another thing to another, who speaks one way in the North and another in the South. In other words, my friends, you cannot afford to have as a president George the Loud and Richard the Silent. What you need is a president who will speak firmly, lead the people soundly and constructively, and place his faith in the people of this country to do what is right. And the Democratic ticket offers you that chance. Now, I think, my friends, it's time that we had people that appeal to the best in America rather than the worst. And that's what I've tried to do. And tonight I lay down the gauntlet once again. where do my opponents stand on the great issues that face this nation? Where do they stand on the greatest torment of our people today? That cruel war in Vietnam. All three candidates say they want peace. My Republican opponent, as usual, has remained silent on how he expects to achieve that peace. Apparently, on Election Day, he will still be testing public opinion polls to see whether they favor the hawk or the dove. I challenge Mr. Nixon to speak out now, and I challenge him to tell the American people what he would do about Vietnam if he were elected president, and to tell them now. I have spelled out my views. I have spelled out my views. I do not favor unilateral withdrawal from Vietnam, nor do I favor further military escalation. May I say, my dear friends, tonight, the candidate for Congress in this district, Anthony Montoya, cannot be with us for one reason. He lost his son in Vietnam, and that son was buried today. I want every member of this audience, some way, somehow, to express their heartfelt sympathy and sorrow to a father who has given the best that he has to this nation, given the best that he has to this world, his son. And Mr. Montoya, from Mrs. Humphrey and myself, on behalf of our government, I say to you, you have our profound sympathy, our heartfelt condolences, and may God bless you in your moment of grief and sorrow for the loss of your great son. This is what Vietnam is: tragedy, sorrow, the thousands of families. And I have spelled out why I believe that the next president of the United States must have a clear vision of what he wants to do in that trouble-stricken part of the world. I insist on an end to corruption in that country. I insist that the South Vietnamese do more of their own fighting. And as president, I shall be prepared. And as president, I shall be prepared when Hanoi shows good faith. I repeat, I shall be prepared when Hanoi shows good faith, and when we can protect the lives of our men to end the bombing of North Vietnam as a first step towards achieving an honorable peace. And my fellow Americans, what greater issue is there than peace? And where do these men that seek this presidency stand on the domestic issues? Where do they stand, Mr. Mayor, on the urban problems that confront us? Where do they stand, Mr. Farmer, on the matters that relate to your needs? This great area of New York is known for its dairy farms. There's never been a Republican administration that ever helped a farmer except to leave the farm in bankruptcy, and that's their record insofar as agriculture is concerned. Yes, where do they stand? Where do these men stand on the issues of education for our young, of Medicare for our elderly, of Social Security, and of our economic development? The third party candidate has had little or nothing to say about this. He bases his campaign on law and order, and he has a record as governor of his state of the highest murder rate of any state in the Union, and the second highest rate of aggravated assault. And he parades through this country as the protector of our men and our women, our boys and our girls, when he couldn't even do it in Alabama, when he had total power as governor. Mr. Mayor, I'm the only man that can stand on a platform in this campaign and say that as mayor of my city of Minneapolis, I dealt with the difficult problems of organized crime, crime in the streets and of violence. And Mr. Mayor and my fellow Americans, I can stand here proudly and tell you that I fulfilled my responsibilities. I can keep this country in law and order. I can help keep your streets safe. I did it as a mayor, and if I did it as a mayor, give me a chance and I'll do it for you as a president to help you. And now a word tonight to my friends of organized labor. I have stood all my life with you as a friend and a partner. The third party candidate appeals to the working man today, and yet he represents an administration in his state that had the second lowest wage rate of any state in the union, and the second lowest per capita expenditure for education of any state in the union. Ladies and gentlemen, the third party candidate has nothing to offer this country in law and order. He has nothing to offer a working man except trouble, and he has nothing to offer America, and America will offer him nothing. He cannot be elected president, and he knows it. And a vote for Mr. Wallace is a vote for Richard Nixon. And if Mr. Nixon and the Republicans get in, you can count on having a recession, a good old-fashioned Republican recession in nothing flat. Jobs gone, factories closed, trouble in Utica and in Rome. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't think you want some more of the same Republican economics. I don't believe you want it. Now, the Republican candidate has made the same usual election year Republican noises. But throughout his career, he has fought against every program that meant something to you. I look in this audience and see a person of 60 to 65, someone that may be receiving for the first time decent hospital and medical care. May I say to that senior citizen that Richard Nixon, the Republican Party, voted no on Medicare, voted to keep you on relief, voted to keep you out of a hospital, voted to deny you the modern medical science, and Mr. Nixon and his Republican Party would have never given it to you. I submit that if you want decency in housing and medical care, you have but one vote to cast. That's for the Democratic ticket on November the 5th, 1968. And Mr. Worker, you more than anyone else know that organized labor has never found a friendly vote in this Republican nominee. Not one. He's voted against your interests in every year that he spent in public service. And may I say to the young people of America that when he had his chance to help you on higher education, on federal aid education, when he had his chance to cast a vote that would have helped the schools of America and the students of America, Mr. Nixon voted against you. He has helped neither the old nor the young nor the worker. And as far as the businessman is concerned, Republican economics left you with much to be wanted, and you know it. This is the record. The last time my Republican friend held office, his party, there were three recessions in 8 years. Consider these facts tonight. Do you want more of the same? I think not. And this you know too, that the Democratic administrations in these past 8 years, starting with John Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson, have given this country the longest unbroken record of economic growth and prosperity and high employment in the history of this land or any other country in the world. And you know, And you know you can trust the Democratic Party to keep it up. And you know that you can trust Hubert Humphrey and Ed Muskie because we're going to do it. There may be a lot that's wrong with this country, but Richard Nixon and the Republican Party can't fix it, and you know it. And neither can this candidate that appeals to racism and bigotry with a bomber for a running mate. Only the liberal democratic faith, faith in the people, faith in the country that sustained Harry Truman, John Kennedy, and Lyndon Johnson can help America in the years that lie ahead. And that vote is in your hands. So tonight, I put the questions before this House. Which candidate and which party have consistently fought to bring economic benefits to all of our people? You know, the Democratic Party. Which candidate and which party have fought for Medicare, for civil rights, for the nuclear test ban treaty, for expanded Social Security, for education, for housing, for Project Head Start, for manpower training for unemployed? And which party and which candidate has opposed them? You know, and I know, the Democrats fought for them, the Republicans opposed them, and now it's our chance to oppose the Republicans in this election year of 1968. The choice, my friends, is not only between Richard Nixon, George Wallace, and Hubert Humphrey. The choice is also between Spiro Agnew, General LeMay, and Ed Muskie. And you add up those choices, ladies and gentlemen, and unless I miss my guess tonight, I think that Utica, Oneida County, yes, all of these many counties in upstate New York are going to give their vote to the Democratic candidates who have never failed you in the past and will not fail you in the future. Tonight America must ask, which man of these three, which team can bring you peace? Which team of candidates can bring unity to our people? A unity based not on fear and repression, but upon faith and respect of fellow Americans. Which of these candidates can keep this economy moving forward? Now is the time for you to choose. And I come here to upstate New York tonight to ask for your help. I believe that America has the chance of a lifetime to either go forward or to let the clock of time stand still or turn backwards. I want you to help me build this nation, not to tear it down. I want you to help me to unite this people, not divide them. I offer you no easy answers, because there are none. But I make my appeal tonight to your reason and not to your passion. I appeal to your hope and to your faith and not to your fear and to your despair. I choose to speak on the issues and not to remain silent. And my fellow Americans, I choose to ask this country to live up to its promise, to give hope to the young, to give security to the old, to give a chance to the black or the white, to give every American an opportunity to be proud of his citizenship. I ask this audience tonight to stand with me as I stand with you to build an America that is the fulfillment of our dream. An America that is a united people, one country in reverent respect for God Almighty, recognizing that there is no freedom for anyone unless it is for all, and there is no justice for anyone unless it is for everyone. Ladies and gentlemen, this can be our great moment. A decision is in our hands. I ask you to go to your neighbors. I do not have the means, the financial means, to carry this campaign through the national media. I ask you to do as we used to do. I ask you to become soldiers of political progress. I ask you to become soldiers of peace. I ask you to become soldiers of national unity. I ask you to join me in a mighty effort to turn back that candidate that preaches hate and bitterness, and to reject that candidate that refuses to take a stand on the great issues of our time. I ask you to stand with a man that's willing to stand up and be counted. I ask you to stand with a party that has stood with you throughout the years. I ask you to help me and to help yourself and to help America. We can do it together, my friends, and on November 5th, we can have the greatest victory that the Democratic Party has ever had. Now let's go to it and get the job done.
Thanks, great.